Welcome back to the program, and we're speaking with Tim Flannery, who is mobile. He is away from his home country of Australia down under. He is visiting the United States to raise awareness about climate change. He is the author of a much-discussed and highly respected book called The Weather Makers. He is quite qualified to write about what's going on with our environment. He's a mammalogist, biologist, humanist, and paleontologist, and was voted the Australian of the Year this year, 2007, so it's a privilege to have him with us for another segment. You are in the United States. You were recently appearing with Bill McKibben, who is probably one of our favorite climate change activists.
Yeah, look, we had the most wonderful evening in Washington. This is my third time in the U.S. over the past year talking about climate change, and it is so wonderful to see the climate of public opinion change so decisively in this country. And that night in Washington with Bill was just fabulous. There was 500 people in a church who really cared about this issue and wanted to make change. And I just came away feeling so energized. You don't see that in my country. It's a distinctively American thing, I think, that getting together of a community of people who decide they're going to do something.
So we are the weather makers. I think we know what we've done to contribute to climate change. Certainly listeners of this program well-versed in that. What are we going to do to turn this around or slow it down?
Well, it's become very evident over the last 2 years, I'd say, that the existing amount of greenhouse gas in the atmosphere is simply too much to allow for climate stability. So there's two things we need to do. One is to reduce or draw down, to reduce the emissions that are going into the atmosphere every year, because each year we put more and more pollutant in, so we've got to decrease that, and that's what Kyoto's about, decreasing the emissions. But we also need to get some of the gas out of the air. Both of those areas are important. One depends on technology, energy efficiency, and whatever else. The other depends on what I would roughly call generally planetary engineering, where we start altering the balance of the atmosphere for the benefit of all living things. And that's a complex task we've just begun to think about.
And how significant a role does population growth play?
Well, population, you know, if we had won the battle for population control when Paul Ehrlich first raised the issue in the 1970s, we'd be in a much better position today. That didn't happen. We lost the battle. And there's not much we can do now about that. You know, population is like the Titanic. It responds slowly over decades to any initiatives we have. What we've got with climate change is an absolutely urgent crisis. We've got, you know, 5 to 10 years to make a difference here. And if we fail doing that, then it's quite likely that the climate system will, because of its positive feedback loop, spiral out of our control. So we can't use population to fix it. Population is a cause, but it isn't the lever we can use to fix it.
And since we are talking about the two countries who have not signed on to Kyoto, that's not going to happen. So do you think that communities taking action and cities and states, which is really starting to happen here in the States, will make the difference? Or, I mean, maybe we don't need any kind of national legislation. Maybe we do. But there's just a groundswell of grassroots activism.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, it's the dismal failure of leadership by your president and my prime minister that have landed us in this fix, this problem, and it's their pride and I think ignorance of the issue that's keeping us on hold. And in that position, what's happened is that other people have decided to become leaders. So in your country and my country, we have environment groups taking the polluters to court. We've got the governors of states taking strong leadership positions, and even the mayors of cities. I was in Houston this morning and met with Mayor Bill White, who is doing the most extraordinary things in what was surely the oiliest and most polluting region of the U.S.
Well, I knew about Austin having a very green mayor, but I didn't know about Houston.
Yeah, no, Houston, they will sign on, they're now negotiating to purchase a third of their energy from wind, which is fabulous. They're looking at planning laws for housing and, you know, efficiency laws for housing. There's lots of good things happening there. It's really quite amazing.
And we do have a new greener-leaning Congress, and there's some debate as to, you know, how effective they're going to be able to be between now and 2008.
We can't afford to wait. We have to push as hard as we can from all directions on this. The 2 years remaining of the Bush presidency could spell the difference between success or failure in our efforts here. I don't believe we can afford to wait. We have to push as hard as we can on this to get the wins through the courts, wins at the state level, the city level, and even the congressional level in the U.S., because that time is precious.
I was going to ask you, what would failure look like, and perhaps a little bit like the picture you've painted for us from Australia?
Look, failure to me would look a bit like this. You know, increased water scarcity, rising sea levels, ruined economies because we're spending so much trying to protect just our existing resources, hundreds of millions of refugees displaced by rising sea levels and changing climate, increased political instability, increased chance of someone doing something silly with weapons, with, you know, so new wars, and as a result of that, a potential descent into a dark age for all of us. I think the sort of mood of the future, if we don't conquer this issue, will be a bit like this country after September 11th, with the fear, the shock, the, you know, the propensity to strike back, and that's just intolerable. I don't think we can afford to let that happen.
And I know it's hard to predict, and I don't mean to pin you down, but I'm just wondering because there's still people who need to be awakened. You're talking about a scenario that's 100 years off, or possibly just 10 to 20.
We don't know. No one can predict the future. But looking at the speed with which the climate's changed over the last few years, I think that the likelihood is we'll face serious problems sooner rather than later. And I think it is possible, it may be a small chance still, but it is possible that we'll face very significant disruption over the next 10 or even 20 years.
How much promise do you think renewable energy sources have for us, solar, wind power? Is that our best hope besides trying to control population?
Yeah, look, it is the new energy sources are a very important hope, and they're already there. We know they can do the job, right? So it's just a matter of cost. And as we start manufacturing more units, the cost will come down. The real problem here is the industries that already exist, the coal industry and the others that already own that space and want to protect it, and the governments that play favourites with industries and therefore curry favour with those people. So that's the big problem. It's not the technology. But we also need to draw some gas out of the air, as I mentioned, and to do that we have to do something very brave. We have to broker a new deal with the poorest people on our planet, the people who live in the tropics, the farmers in the tropics. It's only their land that can really draw down the carbon and sequester it in those growing forests. And doing that is a great challenge. It's one of the things I'm particularly focused on at the moment.
So are they building wind farms in Australia? Are they really ramping up their solar panel, you know, factories and seeing more manufacturers entering the industry?
No, we're asleep at the wheel with this sort of stuff. We've got a bit more wind coming in. But, you know, the third wealthiest man in China makes solar panels. That's where we'll be buying our panels from in a few years' time because of the negligence of our government in investing in this area and keeping the industries alive in Australia.
Mm. Australia and the United States have a lot in common besides sharing a language.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah.
Different accents, but similar, well, leadership, I guess, or lack thereof. So what is your prime minister going to be saying about this? Just stay mum, or is he acknowledging, as our president finally has, that we have a problem here? That's about all he's done, other than talking about a few, you know, alternative fuel sources like ethanol. That's a start. But, boy, talk about too little too late in his administration.
Our Prime Minister's not saying anything very much of significance, but he has appointed this very intelligent and articulate Environment Minister, who I hope will go on to be doing great things, but he has to bring his party along with him. And we still have politicians in Australia saying they don't believe that climate change is human-caused. Our Finance Minister, as little as 3 weeks ago, uttered those sentiments, which astonished me.
How did Al Gore's movie do in Australia, and how much do you attribute that to the waking up?
It was a huge success and was a significant factor in the waking up of the public. But our Prime Minister refused to meet Mr. Gore, which disappointed everyone.
Probably refused to see the movie, too, if he's anything like Bush.
He promised to see the movie, but there's no sign that I know of that he's done so.
And Al Gore, I know, is doing some training sessions in Australia.
Yeah, he is. He is. Look, as Al Gore calls us Bonnie and Clyde, yeah, and I can tell you that Bonnie is not only wavering, Bonnie is walking away at the moment. And by the October election, you'll see the outcome of that.
Yeah, and we know what the fate of Bonnie and Clyde were ultimately, yeah. Well, the science is too strong, the evidence just growing, and yet there's still, you know, major television shows on Fox News in particular in this country who are still, you know, trying to attack the messenger because they don't like the message. They're, you know, trying to dig up dirt on Al Gore constantly. If they put, you know, a fraction of that energy into, you know, teaching themselves about the reality of climate change instead of trying to kill the messenger, we might see some less heat, more light.
Yeah, well, you know, we have a saying in Australia when we play football that if they start playing the man rather than the ball, the team's in trouble, you know. So we know that the team's in trouble, the other side, you know, the sceptics are in trouble. Mm-hmm. They can't criticise the science anymore, so they're just being rude to people. So, and that doesn't have a long-term future.
So what's next for you? What are you working on, another book?
No, I'm really trying to do something with this sequestration of carbon in the tropics. We there's a great opportunity in September this year with the APEC meeting in Australia, and I think that we may be able to work to get a significant initiative up there, which will just buy us some time. I mean, after all that 200 gigatons of carbon that's causing the problem now, that's the cost of us in the developed world establishing ourselves as, you know, developed economies. There is a real debt to be paid back there to the world, and I believe it can be done equitably and fairly and efficiently by reforesting large section of the tropics in an accountable manner. This is a way that a new fair deal. And climate change is so exciting that way. It helps us redefine issues like just the equality between people, you know, financial, social. As we start realising that this atmosphere of ours is a great commons that we all have a share in, and none of us can afford to leave anyone else behind as we start talking about its composition and how it can affect us, it's tremendously exciting.
Well put. Thank you so much, Tim Flannery, for joining us, author of a book I highly recommend, The Weathermakers, also many others, The History and Future Impact of Climate Change. We'll be back right after these messages.